Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey everybody, how you doing? Welcome to another episode of Eating Disorder.
Yes.
Welcome, Crazy Legs Conti. The Reverend Spiro is not with us tonight.
I am honored to be here. I don't know where he is. He's off searching exotic food somewhere.
In Savannah, Georgia, from what I heard.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Low country? I should have had him bring me back some grits. If you're listening, Reverend, bring me back some stone ground grits
He's
from the low country.
He's getting down on some Paula Deen. Well, stone ground grits, you can get that right here in fucking Williamsburg.
You can't. I need the real thing from where they have the giant sundial and they have the small South Carolina kids with their bare feet crushing them underneath. That's how the grits taste good in my book.
It is a lovely town.
It is.
So what you been up to lately? I heard you did a couple of eating competitions.
I did. I had two contests. The more recent one was just Saturday in celebration of Columbus Day. We were out at Benson Ave and 18th Avenue in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, and we
hey,
did cannolis.
Get the fuck
so
out of here.
So we've done cannolis twice this year. I did much better in this cannoli contest, Villa della Bata.
I don't know why I find that sexual.
The cannoli eating contest?
Yeah, I don't know. Just something about
it's
it.
It's a hard shaft exterior with a creamy inside that explodes all over your face. So I don't know why you would find that sexual at
all.
I don't know. I mean, you finish, you look like you've just done like three, like the combo pack of gay porn. So yeah.
I think about that sometimes, like when I'm brushing my teeth and I have that foamy mouth.
You think that's
like that's what I'd look like if I was in prison?
Yeah. No, but I think you could probably protect one hole if you were in prison. So you'd probably, I guess so. But it was amazing. I did 18 cannolis in 6 minutes. They were very delicious. They were very...
So are these the big size cannolis?
Standard
cannolis?
5-inch cannoli.
Not the mini?
Nope, not the minis. Badlands Booker and Tim Eater X Janis tied for first. So I did win some prize money.
You did.
And it was interesting. It was mostly it was an old school contest, like when we had it in the trophy era, because it was a small parade, lovely parade, where all the preschools and the kindergartens would parade by and sing a song. But there were no, I was babysitting, so I brought my 5-year-old charge out with me, thinking there'd be booths of Italian food. There was not. But on that premise was the Russian mega supermarket.
Uh-huh.
So I had him load up this little kid's cart full of like all these sausages and Russian kielbasa.
What every 5-year-old wants.
Yes. And pelmeni. I love pelmeni.
Yeah, pelmeni's
awesome. I had them for breakfast this morning. So, but the other contest was maybe a little more epic in scope, which was the Horseshoe Casino in Hammond, Indiana. And we had a pierogi eating contest. National Pierogi Day was last Wednesday. And this was a Chicago-based
I see a vision
event.
Of you pounding on your chest like Chris
yeah.
Farley.
Well, you know what's strange? Was these pierogies, which were made locally, which were fresh, were very big, very dense. You could not tell the difference between the filling, the cheese and potato filling, and the outside. So at one point I looked over and Joey Jaws Chestnut had mashed 8 of them together in what looked to be like a volleyball and was scarfing it down. And he told me he won, I think he ate 174
How many minutes?
Stoney, 8 minutes.
174 large pierogies.
Yeah, now he had
all cheese and potato.
Potato mixed, yeah, together.
Did you guys get sides of sauerkraut and caramelized onions and applesauce?
I could have used all of that because I didn't eat that many.
You could do the applesauce suppository style.
You know, I would have been protecting both holes if I'd had the apple suppository. But Chestnut was coming off a terrible weekend. He lost to Matt Megatoad Stoney. This is a slender 22-year-old Asian-American kid who dresses in skinny jeans, had beaten Chestnut by eating 20 pounds of pumpkin pie, that's 10 whole pies, in Sacramento, and the day before in poutine, ate 10.5 pounds of poutine.
10.5 pounds of poutine.
For those who don't know, poutine is cheese curds, gravy, and french fries in Toronto. Smokes does a great job up there. So Joey had to win. His pierogi was against the wall, or whatever you want to say. And he did. He won by 3 pierogies. He stuffed about 7 at the buzzer, and then his mouth was so full he had to use his middle finger to poke a hole, like a funnel, through it, and then drink water through it. I ate a Larry Bird, like 33. I got like quadruple lapped. But I was really there to see.
You only got down 33.
Not, it was bad. I did not feel very well coming off my English trip prior to the contest. Second worst I've ever felt.
Well, you said you ate fish and chips almost
every
day.
3 days straight. But I felt great until I got back. And then one like evening out till 6 a.m. did me in New York. So I went to visit Pat Deep Dish Bertoletti and Tim Gravy Brown, winners of the Food Network's Food Court Wars. They have a place in deep, deep Chicago. I think it's the Highland Park Mall or something.
Deep, deep dish
deep,
Chicago.
Hard to find. Yes. Taco in a bag. So I want to get your opinion of this. So they have this. They've created taco in a bag. They make their own chips, which not the ones they served in the restaurant, but Bertoletti greeted me in his car by opening up his trunk, and he had 60 pounds of his handmade chips in the back. He had envisioned what he called a Mexican breakfast gravy, a chorizo-based gravy, as if it was Mexican sausage and biscuits, and he puts it over the chips. He adds a whole bunch of other things to it. He has different, you know, he has sort of pizza in a bag. He has a cheeseburger in a bag. But
interesting, I think that's where we're moving toward as Americans. Yeah, just strap on the fucking
feed bag. And they've made it happen in the mall. They have a food truck called Glutton Force 5 where he does similar foods like Elvis bread puddings and his own version of shepherd's pie, but incredibly rich, amazing flavors. He's a kid at some point, Chef Paul, I'd love you to meet, because it's as if he dreams up flavors that shouldn't go together or ingredients that shouldn't go together.
Right.
And somehow he makes them happen and they go really well together. So
I bet.
So I had a great trip.
It sounds delicious, but it doesn't really feel like you'll keep up that svelte figure.
No. Not with the chorizo breakfast gravy.
It's like your future is to be in one of those Walmart pictures.
Pretty much. Or like the Wall-E movie where you've just got it strapped on. But it was great. It was two good trips, and I'm glad to be back. And we're celebrating Columbus Day, Italian heritage. by going the opposite direction, I guess.
By discussing the Old West.
The Old West. And there had to have been a few Italians in the Old West, right?
I bet. There were a lot in New Orleans. They came to New York and they went down to New Orleans. But, I think it's actually kind of appropriate, especially in looking around here and, like, the fads of how New York is now, that I think, you know, we've already beaten the turn of the century to death, you know, with the mason jars and all that kind of stuff. I think now we need to go further back.
Okay.
You know, like Hickok back.
Yes.
You know, and
wild,
I think the Wild West is the next big fad here in Brooklyn, you know, where we're going to start, you know, lots of pelts and fringe.
Yeah.
You know, so all the millennials looking to make a
restaurants where people are dressed up as cowgirls and cowboys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's where we're heading.
Drinks out of giant. Instead of like the tiki bar out of a clamshell, you get a six shooter that you do shots out of and stuff.
That was how I liked to drink when I was in New Orleans. Every bar I would go into, they would just put the bottle of bourbon up on the bar.
Yeah.
Just made things a lot easier.
In a dusty glass.
Dusty glass. Give me, you know, it was like we felt like we were drinking like gentlemen if we used the glass.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Well, tell us about our guest.
I can actually see you sporting a raccoon hat.
I bought close to a raccoon hat.
I knew
hat
you were going to say that.
Gordon Brothers. Did you see my hat? I got it over here. It's sort of a aviator. It's like a stylish aviator hat. But I love Old West fashion. I've been watching a lot of the BBC. I know it's not that far back, but some of the cravats they wear and those silk ties. I ordered one that is from like a, not like a, recreationists, I don't know what they're called, when they get dressed up in the goods. Right. I guess I could ask our guest what they're called.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
But yeah, I have a nice silk cravat tie and an old school Highland Plains drifter hat. And my facial hair, I'm kind of growing it out as if I'm prepared for 1901 to just stroll into the saloon. But I would be the biggest wuss at the saloon.
I met Jerry Lee Lewis one day backstage at the House of Blues, and I was wearing a seersucker suit, and I had on the colonel bow tie and saddle shoes and a big Panama hat.
Uh-huh.
And he said to me, "You're looking sharp there, brother. Where are you from?" And I said, "Brooklyn." He said, "Get the fuck out of here."
You can never hide our roots.
So tonight's guest, we have Walt Wiley joining us tonight, best known for his character on the cast of ABC's All My Children, Jackson Montgomery. He was on that for almost 25 years.
Yeah, till it's the end of the run. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we have a little clip of him on that show. You have that, Liz?
Jack, please don't go. I love you. I said come with me. Please don't walk out on me, Jack. I need you.
Frankly, Erica, I don't give a damn what you need.
You gotta, I like how there's no drama in those soap operas.
I know, there's no drama at all.
Like I was riveted. That was like a 14-second clip, and I was like, what happens next?
Exactly.
Where's his evil twin coming?
Interesting, though, my intrigue is the comedy. He has a comedy tour where he taps into Richard Pryor and Robin Williams, and the dashing and debonair lawyer Jackson Montgomery gets people guffawing in their three-drink minimums.
That's right, and it, sort of a similar parallel to like Bob Saget, who was on sort of a kid's show.
Absolutely.
Sitcom.
He's completely filthy.
And then worked blue. And the same thing, you know, I wouldn't imagine people who tuned in for Jackson Montgomery would think Richard Pryor was one of his comedic heroes.
Exactly. I was very impressed. I think, Liz, you have that clip of him?
No. That's God's gift to us. And I'm not talking about that white powder you catch mommy putting up her nose, because that makes her want to fuck daddy.
That was a little clip of him giving his father, his son, the drug talk. So let's, without further ado, let's bring on Mr. Walt Wiley. Walt, are you with us?
I am with you. Good morning. Good evening, rather.
Good evening.
So
where are you calling
morning
from?
In our room.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry. I'm just cleaning up. I teased a cannoli until it exploded in my face.
Where are you calling from, Walt?
Just trying to clean up a little bit. I am in my hometown of Ottawa, Illinois.
Ottawa, Illinois, lovely place.
Yeah, you've been there?
No. No, I actually have. I have. I passed through there once when I was a kid in the 80s when I was on my Jack Kerouac hangover, and I thought I was Sal Paradise.
So you did a little road trip, did you?
I did a lot of road trips. Yes.
Yeah, no, road trips are good for you.
They're good.
And I take no offense, but just so people don't get confused and so my father doesn't in his grave start to spin, it's Willie. Otherwise, because there are two L's. That way we made sure people knew we were Irish, not English.
Okay.
Yeah.
Called Will.
We don't want to be taken as English. You know, the Irish never want to be taken as English.
Exactly.
You know, for obvious reasons.
Where in the state is Ottawa? Is it?
Ottawa is in Illinois, about roughly about 100 miles south and just a little bit west of Chicago.
Okay. I was trying to figure out how close I was to you when I was in the pierogi contest or at the mall for a taco in a bag, but... You know,
where was that?
That's a good question. I know it was off the map I had of Chicago, so I will have to look it up. But
just outside Chicago, there's this whole state called Illinois, so you could have been anywhere. Yeah.
Well, now that hot dogs are closing, there may not be much of a reason to go to Chicago anymore anyway. So.
You're not wrong about that, but Chicago's got some great food.
You consider yourself a foodie, Walt? As much as I hate
I'm
to use that
a
word,
food for fuel guy, but when I've got a good bust in depression going, I will find things to eat. Yeah.
Nice. That's what David Sedaris calls the fuck it bucket.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
There now you work actually in three different genres that would probably lend themselves to just grabbing as quick a bite as possible, both on a soap opera set, as a stand-up comic. And then as the third, which is probably the one we'll probably talk the most about, but as a Wild Bill Hickok one-man play, are there things, do you eat before you do theater or soap opera stand-up?
No, I never, ever eat before a show. I just find it kind of slows down the whole thought process. I like that edge of fear of being stunned, just in the neighborhood of starvation, keeps the fear up, which I think is a good thing for performance. Yeah.
I'm a big Boston Celtics fan. John Havlicek always went into games. He said it's good to go in like very ravenous, like you got to go in hungry. So you would do the performance and then you would eat afterwards?
Yeah, usually, but sometimes it's too late to eat. I don't eat very late at night. I'm at that age now where, the shit just rumbles around for 2 hours and I'd rather sleep. So I usually, I usually have a decent sized breakfast, a big lunch, and then salads for dinner, and that's about it for me.
So, Walt, like you were saying in that clip.
Until bedtime, and then it's, of course, cookies and milk because I'm the world's largest 10-year-old, so, yeah.
Nice.
You can't go wrong there. Well, as you were saying in your stand up bit, the bit where you were talking to your son about the not doing drugs, do you actually partake in the reefer?
Well, as I think I said in that little piece, that's God's gift to us along with bacon. I think it's a sin, frankly, not to to turn your back to God's gifts.
Did you ever share a bowl with Erica Kane?
No, I never did. Can you imagine that? Get Erica high, it'd be good. It'd be good. Maybe she'd settle down a little bit and be sweet to me, yeah.
She wouldn't have run you off.
Now, the soap opera world, you're doing like 30 pages a day. It's some amazing clip, right?
That you when we first started out, it was a little more humane. We blocked the whole show, then we camera blocked the whole show, then we break for lunch, then we would rehearse the whole show. Now, of course, those days it was we taped it the way it aired. There wasn't any post. We taped them in exact order. We took little breaks, and then so that's the way we did it then. So we wouldn't really start taping until about 3:30 or so, when the news department was done with the VTRs. Of course, that's changed a lot since those days. At the end, just before we went off the air, we were actually doing 150 pages a day.
Wow.
Every 4 days.
Do you memorize all that?
Maybe 4 pages a day. Oh. I mean, it was an incredible volume. Or we didn't really have rehearsals. We block and tape.
Was it all teleprompter?
How teleprompter? Cue cards?
So.
Was it all teleprompters or cue cards?
We haven't had prompters since, I think they pulled the prompters about 1990 or so, maybe before that or anything. Because it was just another person to pay. You had to pay that TP operator, you know, so they've always been very budget conscious there, so they cut that quite a few years before the end.
Wow.
So to play a character for 25 years, I mean, that's got to be a whole new level of method acting. Did you ever act like a total dick to you?
Yeah, it's a party way too long.
Do you ever find yourself becoming Jackson Montgomery to your friends and family?
Oh, no, geez, no. I could never be as good a man as Jack was. although across the 25 years, I did learn a lot from him. You know, it's funny, you take what you have and you imbue the character with that that fits. And that that doesn't fit of your own personality, you try to stuff down and just kind of ignore for the time you're playing the character. But I got to tell you, I honestly did. I mean, the man was a good man. He was a right-thinking, right-acting, right-doing man. And maybe one of three characters on the show that you could say that about. And so he was, I learned a lot from him. Very seldom put it into practice, but I did learn it.
That's pretty fortunate. I wish the big rider in the sky would give me a little bit of that action.
Was there ever a plot twist or a plot line that you were just like, this is too ridiculous even for a soap opera?
Oh, absolutely. And it cost me my job for about 6 months. They had they'd written a story where Erica was in prison for what I can't remember. And Jack and she were making Google eyes through the glass for the whole time she was there. And then we got a new writer in who decided to shake things up. And Erica had met this Puerto Rican girl in prison there. And when they both got out, she made her maid. Mm-hmm. And next thing I know, Jack and this girl were going to be involved. And Jack has only had eyes for Erica for most of the 23 years, 24 years since they put us together. And so we did this scene where, you know, so I went to the producers and I said, okay, well, there's going to be a journey with this, right? It's not going to be some slam bang thing. We're going to have a little journey. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Two scripts later, I take the girl to bed in the house I built for Erica, in the bed where Erica and I slept. And as we come downstairs, she wearing my shirt, of course, Erica walks in the front door, and none of us knew how to play the scene because it was just ridiculous. Jack wouldn't do that to Erica, this girl, this poor girl. Elizabeth was her name. I can't remember the character's name. But she would never do that to Erica, and it was unplayable because there'd been no journey. And I said, you know, I kind of got a little upset about it because nobody could really help us. We had producers come down. They didn't, like, we don't know what to do either. So, and I said something like, well, this is great with the audience dwindling anyway. Let's chase them away with this storyline. That makes a lot of sense. And that was about a month before I was called into the exec's office and told that they weren't going to be picking up my contract. And I said, you know what? That's fine. I stayed too long anyway. Bye-bye. And then, when they fired that writer, they called me back and said, you know, would you like to come back? And I said, yeah, if somebody above the rank of my executive producer will call me and tell me I was right.
There you go. All right.
Yeah, that
seems pretty strange, though.
Until the vice president of K-Time called me and said, you know what, you were right. So, and then I went back, I think that January, once we moved to Los Angeles.
I got to tell you, playing the role of banging a Puerto Rican ex-con maid seems pretty natural to me. I'm okay
well,
with
there,
that.
Well, there you go. I mean, and, yeah. and you've got a lot of role models there in Brooklyn, so you're good.
So let's talk a little bit about your Wild Bill show.
Sure.
This is pretty interesting.
I could see the writing was on the wall with the soap. I mean, we've been waiting to be canceled for some time. And then when it came, I wanted to be ready. I was there for a good long time. And, I thought, well, I'll just kind of retire, which would be nice, and travel around hanging with my kids. But I'm kind of not built that way. So I wanted to have something to do. And I've been doing stand-up for, I guess, over 20 years now. And I've done a lot of touring with that. I just wanted to do something different. And I have a little theater here in my hometown, and my son Chance and I were in doing Arsenic and Old Lace. Mm-hmm. And we went over to Mendota, Illinois, where the Amtrak station is, to pick up my wife and daughter, who were coming in to see the show. And we took the kind of the back way, kind of the scenic route, and we went into a little town called Troy Grove, which is only about 30 miles from where I was born and grew up. And on the outside of town, they have a sign that says, "Welcome to Troy Grove, Illinois, birthplace of Wild Bill Hickok."
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how old you guys are, but I'm 60, and anything that was on, everything on television when I was a kid was a Western. I think 7 of the top 10 shows from 1963 to 1967 were Western.
I only watched The Fonz.
Somehow, I don't know if I had forgotten or never knew, but I did not know that Hickok was born in the same county that I was. I mean, this is a major icon of the Wild West, perhaps the most famous of everybody in the Wild West. And so I thought, well, that's interesting. So I kind of made a mental note, and I did a little research, and he was 6'2" and blonde and blue like me. And I thought, well, wow, this is kind of interesting. At least he wasn't a short little shit like Bill Cody. So I started to do some research. And frankly, I wanted to strip away the legend and just leave the truth. And the more I did that, the more truth I found, the more verifiable stuff that I found, the more fascinating the man became. I mean, this guy was, plus the fact, you have to, I mean, here, let me give it to you kind of in a nutshell. Here's a guy who leaves Illinois after spending his entire childhood practicing shooting. He gets out there, he gets involved in a couple of gunfights, works as a constable for a very short time. And then after the Civil War, where he served as a scout and a spy for the Union, he sits down with a guy named George Ward Nichols, and he has a conversation with him. And then he goes back, this was in 1865. Then he goes on with what he's doing. In 1867, he comes back in from scouting to find that this Nichols had taken their conversation and turned it into an article that appeared in Harper's Weekly. And this article had been picked up by all the newspapers, and all of a sudden this guy, Hickok, came back from scouting to find out he was famous. He was the first media-generated celebrity.
Ah.
And
so he's the responsible. Hashtag gunslinger.
He's responsible for Lindsay Lohan.
All these stories were greatly exaggerated. Some of them were just damn lies, you know. But people didn't know that. And so people started to seek him out to guide for them, to take them out west and all this stuff. And then, of course, when you read the stories about him, you were like, wow, this guy's unbelievable. And then when he would come to a town, the first thing he'd do is he would put on a display of his shooting skill. He'd put 6 dimes on the top rail of a fence with the edges toward him. Step off 10 paces, whip out his Colt Navy, and take all 6 dimes down in 6 shots, you know. And then he'd go on about his business, and nobody, of course, would fuck with him then, you know. So it's a very smart way to introduce yourself to the public there, especially if you're pinning on a badge. Long story short, the Greek tragedy begins when here's this man who is probably, I would say without a doubt, the most famous of the pistoleers, and he starts to lose his eyesight. He starts to go blind, probably from syphilis, although nobody knows for sure. So here you are. Everybody wants to be the man that put you in your grave so they can have that reputation. He's wearing a badge, and he's going blind. I mean, that's the stuff of Greek,
right.
That's the stuff of Greek tragedy. You can't make that up. So I researched it for about 2 years, and it took me about a year or so to write it. And then I think it was, I believe it was March of 2012 that I started doing it, and I've been touring with it since. So, and it's been a big success. In fact, such a success, I guess, that there's actually two ways that I've been able to gauge that this thing is a success. One is I always do a question-answer thing after the show.
Uh-huh.
And in the 40 or 50 times I've done this show, I've gotten about 5 questions about all my children. So that tells me that
we're very good at like starting off with that.
Because they watch me on the show.
Yeah, they believe you in character.
You know,
that
they don't ask anything about it. That I take that as a very good sign.
Yeah.
Well, another good sign is
we're gonna
the American Heroes Channel just did a thing called Gunslingers, in which I played Hickok, and they approached me about doing it. And I had to be a director's worst nightmare, because here you hire an actor who has been playing this character for 2 years, who has researched and written a show about this character, and they made a mistake of hiring me. So, of course, first day, I'm like, well, this isn't right. I mean, you guys said you wanted to do the truth. This isn't right.
Uh-huh.
But they were exceptional about it. They actually hired me as a historical consultant. They hired me to co-write it. So we rewrote a lot. I wrote most of the voiceover, took a lot of it from my one-man show. And I think my show, if I recall, premiered August 10th, I think, and it's been running quite a bit. And now it's in international markets, so I guess I'm the go-to guy for Wild Bill these days.
That's good.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah,
we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to want to talk to you a little bit about the show, the Q&A you do, and some of the Chuck Wagon favorites that are out there right now. I also want to talk to you a little bit about your cartoon career as a cartoonist. So we're going to take a quick station identification break, and we'll be back shortly.
You are listening to You've Got Me Going, Baby by the Fabulous Conti Family.
The following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
All right, everybody, we're back.
We are.
That's the drop that Liz told me to just watch out for, the drop that I miss every single time.
And I was eating salad, Roberta's salad. Ever since we had little Jimmy on and he ate salad through the entire podcast, I've been fascinated by the Caesar salad here. Yeah. So
it's pretty delicious.
Speaking of food, now, did you do any research into the chuck wagon era of eating, and what would be something they would have around the campfire?
Yeah, you know, Hickok actually made his living hunting when he was a kid. He would hire out other farmers to bring them fresh game. And he also, when he was 13 years old, he worked as a bounty hunter for wolves. He would go out and track wolves and shoot them and bring them back for the bounty on their hide, you know, on their head.
But they would eat the wolf meat?
There are quite a few things where there are quite a few stories and articles. And I did a lot of research anyway, because I had to, I had to fill, 2 hours worth of time. And, these guys, on the one hand, ate very well. On the other hand, they ate very terribly. When they were in town, I mean, most of the game was fresh. You know, they'd be eating fresh venison, they'd be eating fresh bear, fresh pheasant, fresh duck, goose, whatever it was. It had been recently hunted, prepared fresh, and served that day. So in some ways, you get a little buckshot in your teeth, maybe, but besides that,
that's happened to
pretty
me.
Fresh.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I've got a little buckshot eating Dove.
Mm. You shouldn't eat soap, Paul. I don't know. Yeah, no, you just shouldn't do
no,
it.
No, the animal.
Oh,
yeah,
the animal.
The bird, yeah.
What now?
You know, my son was just camping a couple weekends ago, and they actually had Dove for breakfast.
Ooh,
they brought their
delicious.
Brought their 410s and had Dove for breakfast. Yeah.
You mentioned the wolf skins. Thing. Would they eat the wolf meat?
I beg your pardon?
Would they? You mentioned they would tan the hides of the wolf, but would they eat the wolf meat? Was that?
Oh no. They would probably discard that. I don't think anybody was eating a dog. Then.
It's interesting because Crazy Legs and I were just talking about that because we were discussing a theme for a book of taboo items of things that people eat certain places and they
horse,
don't eat other places
dog,
like horse and dog
whale.
And whale.
But
and
we didn't even think of wolf. The boy who ate wolf, it would not have been as successful
the
as
wolf,
the
right.
boy who cried wolf.
Now I want to try it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you eat dove, it just tastes sinful. You
Paul.
Know?
I guess that'd be eater and the wolf, right?
Yeah. Paul might be on a date here during our podcast, and they were going to eat at Roberta's, but now we're going to seek out the best wolf restaurant in Bushwick and just get it, you know, like wolf vindaloo. And I don't know
go.
Other places. All right. I know we're going to run out of time before I get to ask this question, so... One of the things, not necessarily buried in your bio, but one of the things you've also done is pageant hosting or judging or emceeing?
Yeah, no, I thought I buried that really deep in my
bio. Oh, no,
bio.
I went right to that. I was like...
But I guess you found it. Yeah. No, I've hosted a few. Like, it was not this past June, but the year before, Bobby Eakes, a friend of mine from the show, and I hosted the Miss Virginia pageant.
Okay.
And it's, I consider myself an entertainer. I'm an actor and comedian and writer and stuff. I mean, so it's all within the wheelhouse as far as I'm concerned. If you can read the written word and kind of understand what a producer wants, what a show needs, then you can probably do it. Now, whether you want to or not, that's a different story, but I've done everything from hosting the Tournament of Roses Parade to...
the Guns N' Roses Parade?
Are the pageants filled with, is it as many tears and like fraught with tension as I'd imagine?
Not the ones that I've done.
Okay.
I think that most of these, I was very interested to find out that most of these contestants, at least on the state level, knew each other because they've been in other contests, other pageants and stuff. And I think, I mean, of course, there's competition. I found the mothers of the contestants intolerable. The contestants were actually quite fine, but the mothers were just way too...
That's when you were reaching for your six-shooter prepared to, instead of dimes, you were
reaching for that, reaching for that marijuana we talked about earlier.
Maybe you should combine your passions and have like the Miss Sorghum pageant.
Ooh, I like that.
Would be pretty
there
good,
you
huh?
Go. Yeah. There you go. That's right. The Miss Corn Dodger pageant.
The Miss Corn Dodger.
I like that.
No corn dodgers allowed. They need
cooked
to be
over an open fire.
Fully accepting
the Miss
of the
can of chili this year goes to. And I heard Chef Paul mention you do some cartooning or you're a cartoonist.
I was. I always thought that's what I would do. I mean, I always thought I'd be a graphic artist. It wasn't until I was, I guess, close to 30 years old that I had done a few plays and decided to pack up and go to New York. I still draw a bit. I mean, I do all of my graphics, all my posters for the shows and stuff. I love to do that. And I've done my own Christmas cards, I guess, for 30 years. So at least once a year I'm sitting down with pen and ink and doing something.
So when's the memoir coming out? That you do all your own illustrations, you write your story of...
And he was played by Phil Hartman on Saturday Night Live.
That's true. Yes.
That was a funny thing. I was with Andrew Stevens, the actor, out in Los Angeles, and Lucci happened to be hosting that night.
I said, call her Lucci.
Yes, Lucci.
That's nice. Yo,
yes.
Lucci, how you doing?
I know where I'm talking. I made him sit there and watch. I said, let me at least watch the opening monologue. And then we stayed and watched it for a while. And here they do a thing called All My Luggage.
Nice.
And Hartman is to me, it was really obvious he was doing me, but I was kind of embarrassed by that. And so Stephen said, hey, look, he's doing you. I said, no, he's not. He's an amalgam of all soap actors. He said, bullshit, look at the wig he's got on. That's your hair. That's, it was, and that's back when I had the big wham hair, you know.
Oh yeah, so, that's pretty flattering. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, that's a big ticket item.
That's a big pop culture icon thing.
Did now you know her as Lucci? Did Susan Lucci ever? Was she distraught during that 0-19 run on the Emmy? Did she ever
the
come
Emmys,
back to
yeah.
set and go?
Listen, Susan is the classiest person I've ever worked with.
I thought you were going to say classiest broad. I love that.
Yeah, yeah, she's the classiest broad I've ever acted with. She's very, very classy. I love Susan, and she there was never any whining or weeping about it at all around anybody that I ever saw. But the year she won, I said to her, "You know, Susan, I'm not hosting it this year. I think I'm bad luck for you. I'm going to book comedy as far away from you as I possibly can." So I booked myself in Seattle.
Night.
And sure as hell, that was the night she won. I talked to her right after it, you know. I said, "See, I told you. I wish you were here.
Good for Lucci.
Then you wouldn't have won. So thank you for not being there." You know?
Yep.
What was Erica Kane's favorite thing to eat on the set?
For as thin as she is, and she's in great shape, the woman eats, but she's very healthy. I don't ever start eating on set, unless of course we're eating it in a scene. But the eating and trying to eat with that schedule was difficult because you'd have a sandwich calling your name in your dressing room, and then you'd be on set, and it would be going slowly, and you'd be like, "I should have eaten before I came out," but then I'd be slow, and so it was always kind of a task.
I noticed, I thought maybe that one of her favorite things, there was this thing in one of the Chuck Wagon sites about what Wild Bill used to eat, and it was a thing called fart and dart beans.
I thought maybe Lucci might be into those. I didn't want to bring that up. That's not my story to tell, but yes, that was her favorite dish.
Her favorite dish was the fart and dart beans.
We got it at Lou Tess a lot
after work. Nice. Downchange for Lucci.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. Is there anything you'd like to plug for all the folks out there in Radioland?
Well, I've got a big fall tour going for Wild Bill here in his home state, and then also taking the Wild Bill in school program where I go into a high school, teach and mentor for a week, and then use a student crew to put the show on, and then they get a certain percentage of the box office for their theater department there, which they can use for anything. They can use it to do another play to help them get the plays they've scheduled up. They can use it for scholarships. I think the best thing to do to find out everything going on in my world is to go to waltwillyworld.com.
Two L's there too. We forgot the altruistic angle of him helping tomorrow's youth put on shows, because before he started, they could only do guys or dolls. They couldn't do the whole show. They couldn't do guys.
That's right. Sometimes if they didn't buy new football helmets, they could do guys and.
There you go. That's the important thing.
Yeah, that's
I'm going to leave that one alone. Yeah. I'm not going to jump in on that.
I think we should.
Yes. All right, Mr. Wiley, thank you so much
for joining us.
We really appreciate it.
Time.
Have a very good night, and thank you all out there in eating disorder land. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.